and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
Having trouble finding affordable, fresh baked goods and coffee? Come down to Agora Cafe, located in the McMillan Building at UBC. There's also space available to study.
Yeah, what's up, man? Hey, I'm on the guest list. Yeah. Who's headlining here tonight? Yeah, I'm on their list. Oh, well, I should be on there, so...
Looking for that cool band Buzz?
Jeez, I don't know what to tell you.
Shindig is CITR's annual Battle of the Bands. Every year, Vancouver bands compete for prizes including studio time, festival spots, media coverage, promotions, and more. We are now accepting submissions. Please send your demo of original material of at least 3 songs to shindig.submissions@gmail.com. Contact info must include your email and phone number. All genres welcome. Join a 33-year-old legacy of great Vancouver music. For more info, find the CITR Shindig page on Facebook.
Music Waste and CITR are proud to announce the 2016 Victory Square Block Party. This free day of music features Morning Coo, Milk, Jody Glenham and the Dreamers, SBDC, Pale Red, and Tough Customer. There's good tunes, good food, raffle prizes, and more.
Yeah. I ain't trying to sleep.
So come down to Victory Square this September 4th from 2 to 9 p.m. For more information, go to victorysquareblockparty.com.
Battle's going 2 times the speed of sound at the moment.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is... as always, the White Noise Show. That's a half hour of sketch comedy, followed by the White Noise After Show this week, hosted by myself, featuring special guests slash friends slash
okay,
whatever you want to be called.
Friend or host, but don't demote me to guest.
Oh, we're back to guest. it was plural because, of course, we are going to be joined by Sierra Wiley.
You're on a short tether.
But Connor Neckelbutt is crying in the studio with me now. How are you doing, Connor?
Well, not very well. Thanks to you. Ruined my day, really.
Well, maybe we could cheer you up by playing some comedy.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Looks like we just set that up beautifully. So it's time for some White Noise.
Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by hoverboards. It's just like Back to the Future, you know, the bit where the car goes on fire. First up tonight, a couple are arguing.
He is.
He is not.
Come on, have you seen what he wears?
So?
And the way he talks?
Yes, and?
And have you seen how good he is at dancing?
All right, fine. He might be Italian.
It-
Italy is my favourite country. It's like France, but without French people. Next up tonight, we return to my childhood in Blackmore. Burns, boils, and bread and butter pudding. Are we nearly home yet?
Be quiet.
I need a wee.
Don't be ridiculous. We just stopped 3 hours ago.
I'm gonna piss my pants.
Oi, don't. You'll ruin our upholstery.
Ours? This is my mum's frigging car, you parasite Fred.
If you piss in my car, you're cleaning that up with your favourite shirt.
Not my Cyndi Lauper.
The entire knot in it.
Actually, we need petrol.
Yeah, and I'm quite peckish. Let's stop.
What? I just tied a double granny knot.
Do you want something to eat?
No, I'm fine. Just a pack of ciggies and a can of lager, please.
Richard! You can't have lager until after 5 p.m. It's tacky otherwise.
Alan's mum gives him beer all the time.
That's because Alan's mum is an alcoholic. And a slapper.
What? She hits people?
No, she lets people hit that.
Oh, I still don't know what you mean.
Are you pair ready to go?
I'm just waiting for his ciggies.
But the convenience store's over there.
I'm not paying those prices. I just paid some chav 20 quid for a whole carton.
Well, where did they go?
To get the ciggies.
From where?
Oh, bloody hell.
I'm so bored.
Play with your Game Boy.
It's broken.
Why?
I wanted to see what was behind the screen.
Let's play I Spy.
I spy with my little eye a twat beginning with F.
Richard!
Fine. I spy with my little eye something beginning with A.
Anorak.
No.
Asphalt.
No.
No. But asphalt is such a good answer.
No.
Armrest?
No.
Are you sure it's not asphalt?
It's not fucking asphalt, you prick. It was air, okay? You infuriated little man.
But you can't see air.
Home at last. Grab the bags, Richard.
Well, this is nice. Have you always had a laundry machine in the garden?
Oh, I don't know. I hadn't noticed it before.
Well, maybe I can move the laundry machine.
Oi! Leave my fortress of solitude alone!
Richard? Alice?
Dad! Thank God!
Oh, Gary, how are you?
Fine. Where did you go?
The shitty seaside!
Hi, I'm Fred.
Who the fuck are you?
I just said, Fred.
Right, but why are you... Oh, Alice, for goodness sake, not again!
Oh,
this is the third holiday in a row you've married someone else.
Well, maybe if you had actually come with us to the seaside, I wouldn't have to.
You know, I'm terrified of spending time with you.
Then what did you expect?
Shall I put the kettle on?
Shut it, Frank.
It's Fred.
Well, soon you'll be fucked.
Alice, I best be off. Call me or not, either way.
No, Fred. Don't listen to him. Just because the other two guys ended up in hospital doesn't mean you will too.
Goodbye, Alice. Goodbye, Richard.
Whatever, Frank.
Fine. Sod you all.
Right. Richard, go to the shop. Grab me 12 Carlin and whatever you want. But no spirits. I'm not made of money. Alice, there is a pile of dishes in the kitchen, so stop slacking. And I'll go call the divorce lawyer.
I'll get the number.
No need. He's on speed dial.
My parents realised not long after that their problem, which was me. But that's a story for another day. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back.
I'm so flipping hot. I've gone right off my dog food.
I know, this park isn't what it used to be.
Well, not since we set fire to it.
We? You were the one who tried to find out if trees were flammable.
And it turns out they are. So it was worth doing.
But everyone else already knew that.
Well, if we had the internet or a book, this wouldn't have happened.
Whatever, Carl. But you're right, we can't sleep here anymore. There is no coverage now. I mean, everyone can see me doing my morning ablutions. And apparently, children don't want to see you poo.
Don't I know it? So, what are we going to do?
We are going to nick a caravan.
Shouldn't we be at a caravan park?
No, because then people might be inside them. We're going to nick one at someone's driveway.
Oh, nice. Suburban crime.
Yeah.
Does that make us middle class?
No. Knowing the rules to bocce makes us middle class.
So which one do you think?
That one looks like a four berth.
Who's going to give birth?
No, it sleeps four people.
Where are we going to find two more people for it?
Just shut the fuck up and back up the van.
It's too heavy to push on my own.
Reverse it. Mm-hmm. Here's the keys.
I've never driven before.
Yeah, you have.
No, I haven't.
Oh, maybe I do micromanage a little bit too much. All right, well, back me in then.
No problem. Okay. Okay. Keep going. Keep going. You've got a foot. You've got a foot!
I thought I had a foot.
Yeah, bye. It's still stuck. Ah, drive forward.
Oh, for friggin' sake.
Ah, my foot. That was my favourite one.
Oh, shit.
You bastard!
Oh, calm down. You're fine.
I can see all my tendons.
What's going on here?
Nothing, madam. We were just turning around in your driveway when I accidentally touched my acquaintance's foot.
Dear God. Looks like it went in a blender.
Any chance of a towel and some vodka?
Oh, for antiseptic?
Yeah, sure, that too.
I'll phone for an ambulance.
Well, only if it's not too much trouble. I'm sure Carl can walk it off. Actually, yeah. Go on, then.
Just remain calm, Mr. Weathers. We'll get you to the hospital soon. Mr. Neil, would you please sit down? What are you doing with a balaclava?
Driver, pull over. Change of plans.
Shitting hell, he's got a gun.
I think it's a super soaker.
Well, I just did my hair, so you can forget it. All yours, mate.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Every single shift.
All right, then. Where to, Carl?
Hospital, perhaps?
Nah. Here, take two of these morphine. You'll feel right as rain. We're going to the strippers.
Oh, I am definitely getting an infection.
I wouldn't drive an ambulance. I'd much rather drive a taxi. It's way easier to pick up women. Next up tonight, someone shopping.
Hi there, what can I get you?
I'll have a bag of Canadian classics, a lighter, People's magazine, and something for a treat. What are those?
Those are glass pipes.
What are they for?
People use them to, like, smoke methamphetamines.
Oh, and what's that like?
I'm not sure. I don't know. People who do it seem to stick at it.
Well, I'll take one, please.
Okay.
Do you sell the meths?
No.
And you call yourself a convenience store?
I bought some salvia at the convenience store the other day. I thought they were selling saliva, but it worked out because it did make me drool a lot. And see God, next up tonight is Future Historians.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Future Historians. We are still excavating an ancient township dating back to around the turn of the millennium. Our first find today was a perfectly preserved digital video disc dating back to around 2001. It is titled Fast and the Furious, and our researchers tell us it was a high-budget homosexual pornography film that was hugely popular among the mentally ill and an offshoot of the Homo sapien we know as the Homo broapien. Let's take a look at what else they found. Jody, what do you have there?
This is what experts believe was called a jigsaw puzzle.
And what were they for?
Apparently, they were really useful for passing the time until you die.
Fascinating. And what do you have there, Robert?
This magnificent piece of primitive engineering is what's known as a Harley Davidson motorcycle.
And what were they good for?
Many people use them to gain life-altering injuries, and some people also use them to compensate for a lack of personality.
I see. And lastly, Phoebe, what do you have there?
This is a piece of gold jewelry worn most likely by a woman or a tasteless pimp.
And what is jewelry for?
Well, our records show its main usage during this period was to earn fellatio during long-term relationships.
Well, I'm just glad customs have changed and now people just accept cold hard cash. That's all we have time for this week. Join us again for more Future Historians.
Wow, I wonder what else will seem pointless in years to come. My money is on birthday parties. I mean, call me when the kid actually accomplishes something. Next up tonight is an interview.
Good evening and welcome to Creepy Conversations. I'm Brad Stoker, and tonight I'm joined by celebrated juggler and zombie, Kenny Fumble. Hi, Kenny.
Good evening, Brad, but it's actually Fumble. It's pretentious.
Sorry for that. So, tell me, why did you call my office and demand an interview?
Because all I ever hear lately on the radio is zombies have to go. Zombies are bringing down the country. Zombies are eating my brain.
Interesting. But aren't they?
No, they are the backbone of the workforce. Who do you think does the overnight shifts at 7-Eleven? Who's stocking the shelves at midnight at the grocery store? Who's working the toll booths?
I don't know. I've never bothered to check.
Zombies. Well, not just zombies, but they are there, trust me.
You seem quite frustrated.
I am. I'm sick of being confused with stoners, morons, and reality TV enthusiasts. It's not fair. I didn't ask to be bitten this way.
Is it not a choice for some zombies?
Well, maybe, but not for me. Or loads of other zombies I know.
How scientific of you. Well, what will make you calm the hell down?
We need to see a total change in zombie-human relations. We need to be respected and accepted. Not just tolerated. Tolerance doesn't equate to understanding.
But you're a bunch of brain-eating psychopaths. Wouldn't you agree?
Wow. You need to check your human privilege right now.
I'm sorry. I'm just sick of listening to you bloody creatures whining about your rights being infringed.
Oh, it's too hard for the little human to have to hear about other creatures suffering.
Exactly. So let's talk about something fun.
Fine. How about the injustice of Syria?
Did you see Suicide Squad?
Yes, more minorities being enslaved to do the white man's work.
Are you a lonely guy, Kenny?
I guess.
Yeah, but your blog keeps you busy, right?
Yes.
Do you get out much, Kenny?
I like to go feed the ducks and then eat them.
Maybe try boxing. Let out that stress. Or some yoga.
I like being husky.
Do you really? Do women look at you and then flinch?
Only the stuck-up ones. The others at least show some pity.
Come to the gym with me, Kenny. Get a sweat on.
Zombies don't sweat. We do ooze a bit, though.
Whatever. Just bring a towel. I've seen worse.
Okay. Sure. This could be the start of a beautiful relationship.
Calm down. Just need someone to spot me.
I wish I was a zombie. Their mum couldn't make me eat vegetables anymore. I wouldn't mind, but she's been dead for 4 years. Next up tonight, someone has a question.
Dad?
Yeah?
Is the Easter Bunny real?
No, of course not.
Oh.
It's just a load of made-up nonsense, like the female orgasm.
What about Santa Claus?
Fake. Just something made up to make people spend money on children.
The Tooth Fairy?
Probably the creepiest of all. Someone who collects teeth. I knew a guy like that in prison.
Well, what about God?
Well, that's real, of course.
How do you know?
Well, because of the book thingy.
The Bible?
Yeah, it says in there.
But I heard the New Testament was written by some shepherds who never met Jesus because it was 500 years later.
Well, yeah, but people told them the stories.
But most people talk a lot of bollocks, don't they?
Well, I guess that's true.
And you still believe the stories?
Yes. What else am I going to do?
Reserve judgment.
For what? Until I'm dead? I don't think you think much then.
You must do if there's a heaven. You would think there. Or hell.
I'm not going to hell.
But you went to prison.
For unpaid parking tickets. And hitting a police officer.
I don't know. It just all sounds too good to be true. Kinda like Santa.
I believed in Santa until my dad vomited on the Christmas tree while dressed as him. I can spot my father's vomit from a mile away. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Conan Echoput and Simon Welton. Music and fart effects by Simon Welton.
There we go. There was the White Noise show. I hope you enjoyed that. What do you guys think of that lot?
I thought the diverse voice cast was pretty incredible. But I mean, closer to most radio shows, so.
Yeah, well, it would help if you turned up, Sierra.
I'll think about it. I'm here now.
Yeah.
I thought my phenomenal vocal repertoire was, frankly, out of this world.
I thought you really got a toddler girl here.
Yeah. There was only somewhat confusion, I think. I think the only one that I really wish we'd had more people for was the Blackmore's Mum one. It was
Richard!
We did our best, but it wasn't quite the same.
Same without
Caitlin. The authenticity, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we'll have to re-record that one at some point.
Maybe.
Nah.
Sod it. Move on. Let's get over it. Alright, if you enjoyed that, make sure you keep up with us throughout the week at Facebook and Twitter at White Noise UBC. That's at White Noise UBC.
On Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, and if you'd like to send us comments and thoughts on the show, whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. Alright, we're going to play some music and then we're going to be right back with the White Noise after show. That's where we play some kick-ass music and we also do a bit of debate, a bit of chit-chat today. We're going to be talking about the existence of God. We're going heavy today. We're also possibly going to talk a bit about Trump, what he's been up to today. And just for fun, we're going to talk about Chris Brown, and because he's been in the news today. And not necessarily what about Chris Brown, but what it says about people, the fact that there's so many people still buying his music and still supporting him in the face of, like, blatant, obvious crime. But yeah, we're going to get into that later on. But first, let's play some music and we'll be right back. So tonight, Connor was picking the music. So what are we starting with tonight, Connor?
Starting with Japanese Girls.
Japanese Girls. Connor likes to start with Japanese Girls. All right, here we go.
Oh my God, oh my God! You're finally calling me yours! I count
Oh my God, you're finally calling me out.
All right, there you go. That was Creef with Dark Metro off Automatic. It was a good follow-up to Japan Girls there with
Different
Oh My
tempo,
God.
Different tempo, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Album's actually quite good, the Creef one. And Japanese Girls as well, actually. Both two really solid albums.
Yeah. Good start to the show. All right, guys. So our first topic tonight, I was actually a bit misleading with what I said earlier, which is we were talking about God. But what we're actually going to talk about is the idea of, in the sketch tonight, we had the girl questioning her father on his beliefs. And what this leads us into is, what is the role in parents in raising children in terms of religion? Should they sort of put their beliefs on children? Should they try not to influence the child at all? What do you guys think? Do you think there is a role for religion? If your parents are religious, you know, it makes sense that they would bring you up religious in the terms of, like, that's their customs and their traditions. And, you know, as much as I believe in existentialism, I understand that, you know, for you to be part of a household and a family, you have to understand that family. So they have to at least get where their parents are coming from. So, yeah, what do you guys think?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, like, I think it's changed so much, especially over the past century, as children have had more freedom, especially to move apart from their families, to separate from the nuclear family right after high school or university. But I think it was, like, historically, it's always been a good way to, like, keep connected to your children and establish them within, like, the hierarchy of church and state and how it all works together. And then now it's more of, like,
and it's actually not meant to work together. It's meant to work separately.
Oh, it's meant to.
No, since independence. Actually, only in the last 100 years has American church and state been reintertwined with, like, the In God We Trust on the money and things like that. That's all, like, the last 100 years.
But I think over, like, the great arc of history, there's been so much connection between church and state, and governments were able to organize people through.
Pre-American Revolution, yeah. Absolutely, because that was how you kept the monarchy in charge, was you said that they were divinely chosen.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the ways that you can connect to society, by having the same fantasy, quote unquote, of religion.
Yeah.
To connect people. But yeah, it's also, like, interesting on a personal level, because it's like I have, like, how I grew up and then what I think is the best way. And it's vastly different, right?
Right, because you were brought up in a Catholic household.
Yeah, and, like, my whole family, really Catholic. Like, church every Sunday, went to thing, I think, called religious education. But then I went completely 180 when I went to university, and now I'm like, okay, like, if I were to have kids, I would want to give them the option and educate them on the other options. Because when I grew up, it was always like, this is the way, this is the only way. If you try to think of anything else, you're going to hell. And I think that's such a destructive way to raise a kid. But it's hard not to, like, push your beliefs on your child in any way, not just religion. So, I mean, I can understand why it happens, but I would ideally like it not to, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a very different thing, in that I did go to a Church of England school, primary school, so we had the vicar come in on a Tuesday and read us fables, and we did a prayer at the beginning of an assembly, and we had choir where we sang songs which were all actually church hymns. But I didn't feel like I didn't really feel like it was rammed down my throat, or that I was being forced to, you know, make any decisions on religion at that point. It was just, I was told stories, and you went and listened to stories, and you said the prayer, which was a prayer that everyone, you know, basically saying that everyone should be happy. And so, you know, it didn't seem to be about God. It was just more about, like, you know, being a good person. And then when I got to high school, we had religious education, which is a national thing in Britain, where you actually learn about all religions.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, like, and it's a really good idea, especially in any country that has multiple. Well, I think any country whatsoever, because it gives you, even if you're not religious, it gives you an understanding of where everyone else is coming from in terms of, you know, certain ways they dress, certain practices that they have, so that you're not, misinformed about them, and you can, you can actually accept what people are doing and really see past all of that and what it means. Because it's a fear of the unknown, I think, a lot with sort of animosity between religious groups. And, you know, it's
definitely,
it's, people are more scared of people they don't interact with and don't understand. Like, that's what it comes down to, groups that they don't have a connection to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it does help a lot. So, yeah, and it doesn't have to be for the whole of school. Like, we're talking grades 7, 8, and 9 is enough to go through all the religions of the world, you know, and give a brief overview of religious practices and, you know, it teaches things like, well, what is in a synagogue and, you know, what would they do in their major ceremonies and all those things. And yeah, so it's very useful in life. I think, you know, it's probably one of the more useful things you can learn at school over some of the, you know, sort of very sort of narrow things we learn in sort of the higher levels of high school. But yeah, what do you think, Connor?
I think you raise a fantastic point, the two of you, in that I think a parent, and maybe an education system, should really try to sort of give you the baseline of, like, tell you what's out there, give you the options. So maybe even suggest some places you can find. So, because in the end, religion should be about spirituality, and often it's not. Often it's about the dogma or the institution more than the actual one-on-one or within oneself spirituality. So allowing people to be able to see what the options are and then encourage them to explore them, I think is fantastic. And then, and to one of Sierra's points earlier as well, the idea of, especially in perhaps sort of Christian religion, of there being of this emphasis on avoiding going to hell, I think is a terribly negative way of trying to bring up a child, trying to encourage a child to become spiritual, because fear doesn't promote spirituality. It's the opposite. Spirituality is something from within that broadens your life view, your purpose, your perspective, and that can't be about fear, because as you've just said, fear of the unknown, fear of loss, fear of things you can't control only leads to more animosity.
And it just polarizes people, right? Like, the more scared they are, the more they feel different from other religious groups, the more they just don't understand. And then they push further in that direction. And, I mean, yeah, as you said, Connor, good point. Like, religion needs to be something that makes you positive and needs to, like, that spiritual element that's, you know, what you need to help you get through your day if you need that extra bit, right?
Exactly.
Not something that you're constantly, it's right on your back, you're running from it. Oh, I'm so scared that I'm sinning, right? Like, from the age of 7, so in the Catholic Church at least, it's like, this is your first reconciliation. You're going to go to the priest, you're going to tell him all of your sins. And, like, that just feels even so unnatural, even having gone to the church as long as I could have remembered at that point. I was like, what have I done wrong? You're trying to think of your flaws in this social context of the great Ten Commandments and everything that all humanity has done wrong. And it's like, hey, you, kid, carry the sins of the world on your shoulders. You know, you're guilty of everything.
Yeah,
Adam and Eve.
Yeah,
and I think that's so destructive. And it, like, really ruins kids' confidence and sense of freedom. And I think that's a real shame. So I think there are probably other religions that are a lot more positive than that. I've definitely heard of some, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're going to...
What were your 7-year-old sins, Simon?
Probably nothing I should repeat on air. I don't know. I'm sure I could get myself in
too
trouble.
Too many ciggies? Drinking lager before 5 p.m.?
Yeah, yeah. You know, get up, drink a few before Power Rangers. You know, it's just how he did it.
illegally download them.
No, hey,
watch,
dude,
Pokemon after bedtime.
You don't know how old I am, man. I'm like pre-dial-up at that age. Like, we were downloading pictures of porn the first time I went on the internet. All right, let's play another song. We'll come back and talk about another topic. If you guys do have any comments on what's going on, we did have some calls in, but we'd prefer it if you email in your comments and thoughts. It's whitenoiseubc@gmail.com, or you can Twitter and Facebook us at White Noise UBC. So whatever you're thinking, give us a shout. All right, coming up next is a band we played last week, but they're killer, and this is a different track by them. So sit back and enjoy. This is the Pack AD with Los Angeles. We'll be right back. right, there you go. That was Hayley Bonner with Kismet Kills. Good to know. All right.
Yeah.
So we're back in the studio, and our next topic for tonight is a suggestion by Connor, which is sort of on the same topic of what we've been talking about. What is the best myth? And it doesn't necessarily have to be one from our own cultural background. It could be from anywhere in the world. Have you got a thought on this one, Connor? Did you come up with one?
I've been struggling. I really enjoy the tales of the Greek gods and the Greek heroes and heroines of old, because the characters in them, they're never really... they're never perfect. They're always slightly curious, and the stories are always super fantastical and exaggerated, and sometimes downright horrible. Right. But there's a lot to sort of play around with and to admire in the way that the gods aren't portrayed as particularly generous or caring towards people. And in a world that has so much turbulence at times, if you're going to believe in any kind of religion, that one almost makes the most sense. Well, the gods are fighting each other.
Yeah, there's sort of thing, Stephen Fry talking about that, sort of similar idea, and that, yeah, the idea that it's
Watch
sort of,
that clip this afternoon.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. It's sort of, yeah, the Greek gods were more of a reflection of reality. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting you point to that, because that was Plato's problem with them. If you read Plato's Republic...
who hasn't?
Well, if you've taken first year political science, philosophy, or anything of the art, you end up usually having to read it.
Nope.
But in there, in creating the perfect society, he talks about how he would remove the stories of the imperfect gods from the education of children, because it teaches imperfection in children. It teaches a lack of virtue. It suggests that it's okay to be completely flawed and to do great deeds of evil, because they do. They murder and they have sex with their relatives. They do all sorts of horrendous things.
Well, to be fair, there's only a couple of them, so I mean,
yeah.
You go out the family
but it's
tree,
like
yeah,
it's like Kim Kardashian. It's like the Kardashians on steroids. Like they're all just at each other's throats, and it gets bloody and ugly. So. You know, he said we need to not talk about this at all and just talk about the good guys and the good stories and the good behavior.
It's a fantastic counter, actually. You're absolutely right. It does breed a level of contentment, or contempt rather, contentedness with the world is imperfect.
I don't think he would have been happy with the Christian Bible myth either, because of the contradictions in there between the ideas of perfection and the reality of our world. He would find it hypocritical as well. But I do like the Greek myths. Other ones, I mean, there's so many that we talked about in like anthropology classes that I have taken that are awesome stories. I can't think of any great ones off the top of my head, though. I have to admit, the mythology of like Saint George when I was a kid, I always thought was fascinating. The idea of like taking a dragon on. And you know, wearing like knight's armor, and if I, you know, was to live out a myth, that would be a pretty badass myth to be part of.
Very patriarchal.
Yeah, I would turn me into Shrek though, right? Because that was basically what he did. He took on a dragon for it. So maybe it's fitting. I don't know. What about you, Sierra? Do you have a myth for us?
I was going to go along the same lines of Connor. I mean, my favorite growing up were always the Greek myths. Those are the ones I was most familiar with. But yeah, I mean, I liked all of them, really. They were scary, but they were practical in a way of just being, like, sometimes so over the top. I really liked the story of Persephone and Hades kind of capturing her, even though, you know, a little bit depressing, not very feminist
very
in that.
Gets very X-rated if you look into it, yeah.
But there was something about the story of, like, having the winter and the summer and the kind of the explanation of the seasons and having it like the part time between her mother and her husband, which I thought it was like, you know, Greeks in a few thousand years ago had this idea of equality in kind of a way that we have hardly even grasped yet. And it's kind of like, even if like, not even if they wanted to, but there had to be some form of balance between the two. And I just really enjoyed that story, but a lot of them even.
Yeah, there's one that really bugs me in Greek mythology, because I feel like it makes this sweeping generalization.
I bet you're the kind of guy who hates Hermes.
No, it was Ring of Gyges. Ring of Gyges is the story of... it's basically what Lord of the Rings is based on, and it's the idea of a guy finds a ring that makes him invisible. So once he has this ring of invisibility, he then does all this great evil because there's no consequences. And it suggests that morality is only because there are consequences and people can see you acting out. But if you had this ring, the suggestion is everybody would do evil and, you know, would be badly behaved.
It's an important point to make, though.
It is and it isn't, though, because it suggests that humans, like, are... It could suggest that humans are inherently evil, or that, you know, that we're only good to sort of to be self-serving and to... Which is not true, because people do all sorts of acts of heroism without reward and without...
Well, you could argue semantics, though, and think of, I mean, you say evil. Like, what are your conceptions of good and evil? Is evil just... the putting yourself before others, or is what?
I see what you mean.
The way that you interpret it, right?
Well, not so much evil, but just like immoral. The idea that everybody would act immoral if there was no consequences. Evil's the wrong word, but yeah. So, I think it's impossible to prove that it's true. That's what I don't like about the story, is that if that was like a generalization that was fair, but it's just presuming that everybody wouldn't behave well.
Or at the very least, it sort of suggests that some people would, yeah.
Well, I mean, you can see it in any, like, anarchical society where there's, like, a decentralized or, sorry, like, no real kind of central form of government or authority or, like smaller scale situations. Like, Lord of the Flies, not that actual book story, but the kind of, like, a separated group of people.
Okay.
And I think you'll see, really quickly... I think you'll see the lower morality, and I think you'll see like some very violent acts, but I think you'll also see some very altruistic acts. So I think the lack of that visibility just kind of separates the two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at areas where there's been like atrocities when states fail, as we've seen in the last 100 years, sadly, in a lot of places in Africa. And,
Somalia, yeah. Obviously a big one right now, yeah.
It's unfair to say that with the failing of government that everybody acted out. What happened is government fails and then groups within that who are already militarized become even more and, you know, start having a civil war. And the majority of the populace are unarmed and are just basically getting in the way of warring factions. That idea of anarchy, sort of, you know, if markets crash and the chaos ensues, that's more of a film fantasy that we see in, you know, the Escape from New York and the Mad Max and all that sort of stuff. But I don't think we've seen that in reality. What we've seen is just certain people within the group end up, you know, causing a lot of pain and destruction in a failed state situation.
But it's interesting, the knock-on effect, because I think you're right. I think you're right. If you left everyone alone, if you said failed state, everyone's alone, and you just took the actions of individuals without their actions having... ripple effects. I'm sure you would find that most people would probably sort of double down and sort of really, you know, get to grips with, like, with the community, with doing what they're doing to promote equality and to promote growth within their small communities. But the fact that a particular couple groups that are militarized, as you say, can essentially take over areas because of a lack of resistance or using certain sort of propagandistic methods of recruitment can really sway that balance. In the absence of a state, the long-term effect might be that while everyone would have naturally stayed, for the most part, somewhat altruistic, or at least not bad, or not evil, or immoral, that the balance of play has changed, and those groups that sort of bring everyone down to their level in a way, and really sort of polarize society into either those who are against them or those who are with them, and those who aren't often get run over.
But the security, even in our society, is a bit of it's a fallacy. It's a facade that we pretend that we have the police force to prevent crime in cities, when in reality what they most rely on is that most people don't behave badly. If everybody behaved poorly, the police system would completely collapse, because even now, if you look at statistics that we did, I looked in it when I took a forensic psychology class, about 1% of reported crime are people arrested and tried and prosecuted for. most crime, because they just don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the resources, or they don't have the evidence, or whatever, they cannot process, and, you know, either crimes aren't reported, crimes scenes, you know, or there's
is this
problem.
In Canada? Or?
This is a North American statistics, but it's pretty well really? The same in the US, the States, and what it relies on is for us to either buy into the belief that we would get caught, but I don't think most people who, you know, elicit habitual criminal behavior are under, you know, feel that way. It's just the majority of people who wouldn't behave badly anyway assume that if I was to behave badly, I'd get in trouble. But that's not the only reason that they don't do it anyway. So you end up with, yeah, it's weird. Like, we don't really have the security we assume we do right now, because it's not like years ago where the state maybe had all the weaponry that was, you know, miles ahead of personal weaponry. Nowadays, like, you know, could be, you know, if you're a gangster, you can arm yourself like an army for not that much money in North America.
And warfare is asymmetrical now, so the disequality still exists because states have nukes and gangsters don't, but those gangsters can cause a lot more harm than they would have 100 years ago.
Yeah, and as we've seen from guerrilla warfare, it doesn't matter who has nukes anymore. You can still, like, you know, you could, like, the, you know, America hasn't won a war since nukes became a reality. They've only tied or lost. So,
but it's just about the fear of it, right?
Yeah. It works in state versus state conflict, but it doesn't work in when you go against a state that is like you try and invade their land, as we saw in Vietnam, Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan, Nicaragua, Cuba. Like, it just not the guerrilla tactics will defeat any army that tries to invade, because you don't know where the enemy is, you don't know who the enemy is.
This is more easy to support.
Yeah, really, it's impossible to fight.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you play a song?
Well, we're nearly out of time. We're at 9:58. Any last thoughts on the topic, Sierra?
Nothing that wouldn't start a huge long tangent.
Yes, fair enough.
I've been biting my lip here while you go off on other directions.
well, any last thoughts, Connor, before we go tonight?
No, it's a good conversation.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, we can, you know, potentially talk more about it next week, but I'm sure we'll have a bunch of other things to come up with. So we will be back next week with a brand new half hour sketch comedy and a half hour chit chat music and all that fun stuff. We're going to leave you tonight with the awesome Malcolm J and Light Brothers. We'll be back next week, so join us then, please. In the meantime, keep up with us on Facebook and Twitter at White Noise UBC, and email us whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. And you can even check out the best of us at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. Anyway, see you very soon.
Question, it shit went down. man, I would be the with my biggest weapon. Got no time, no waste time, I didn't have to mention. This world's got you twisted, conflicting, always stressing, but you kept me out of trouble. And that's the truth, I owe you to the last coefficient in the room. You found a different route, the story's living proof. That life ain't easy, I respect what you're going through. You know I love you, man. You know I love you, man. You know I love you, fam. Yo, you know I love you, fam. You know I love you, fam. You know I love you, fam. You know,
cause you kept me out of trouble. Pushed away the devil, yeah. You know me on a whole nother level. Check this out, yo. I know you like my brother. Trust you like my brother.